On This Week in Enterprise Tech, it's Interop, Interop, Interop. Quiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the following show is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twiet. This Week in Enterprise Tech, Episode 12, recorded October 1, 2012. Interop Live. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. It doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one pool plan. To save $50 on your first Ting device, visit enterprise.ting.com. That's enterprise.ting.com. And by MailRoute. MailRoute is email filtering in the cloud for companies of any size. If you're tired of little or no support from your email filtering service, then MailRoute is the answer for you. For 10% off the life of your account, visit mailroute.net. Click the sign up button and enter the promo code ENTERPRISE. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media in a systematic way with Social Media Solutions from SAP. Learn more at sap.com/twit. Welcome to Twiet This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to enterprise professionals, IT pros, and the geek who just wants to know how the world is connected. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise, with a super special edition. If you can see behind me, we are live at Interop. That's right. The most advanced, the premier networking event in the world has come to the Javits Center. And I'm joined by a special guest here, Mr. Glenn Evans, who happens to be the lead engineer for Interop. Glenn, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Patrick. Glad to be here.
You want to say a little bit about what your job here is at Interop and how you guide the rest of us?
I'd like to. I really don't know what to say. My basic job spec is to keep you guys under control.
Keep us under control. And you're doing a bang-up job, by the way.
The secondary part of that is to build a network that all the attendees and exhibitors can connect to and get out to the internet and also demonstrate their whatever technology they're trying to sell in the booth.
All right, exactly. Now we're going to get back to that because Interop is a unique experience. It's a unique networking event. But before we get into that, we do have one more member of the panel, and that is the ever-present, the ever-lovable Mr. Brian Chi. Mr. Chi, where are you located at the moment? You need to turn off that mute.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm in InteropNet NOC, and I just got the wireless guys confirming that, yes, indeed, we did have a snorkel lift go by and drop our point-to-point wireless link, and that's what caused the dropout.
Yeah, exactly. But, that's all good because we're here about that. I mean, one of the nice things about Interop is we are here to put the tech that we see and the tech that we market and the tech that we talk about actually into a production network where the rubber hits the road. Glenn, tell me, what is Interop? How did it come about? And, why is it different than other shows?
Well, Interop sort of started about 25-odd years ago down in Monterey, California. It was essentially designed as a test bed for new technology. Back in those days, routers were just coming out to the market. It was still experimental in a lot of respects. And a lot of vendors didn't know whether, their box would talk to another box from Company B. So it was decided to get together in a room and see what they could do. And part of that was, having the guys who wrote the code sitting side by side and trying to work out the problems. And that's essentially how it started, as a plug fest, as an interoperability lab. And over the years, it's become commercial, and we've moved to where we are now.
Yeah. But that's one of the things I love about Interop, in that it wasn't top-down. I mean, it started with the engineers.
Oh, very much so. It was a grassroots thing.
Right. You had a bunch of guys who were saying to each other, wait, why is it that my gear can't talk to your gear? Yeah. Or why is it that your piece of equipment can't use this as an accessory? And so they met it in a cafe, and in true geek tradition, they said, look, let's open up our code.
Let me see your box. I'll let you see my box. Let's make it interoperate.
Exactly, yeah. And as time's gone on, it started just as, let's say, you know, routing code. Then it became switching and all the various flavors of Ethernet. And they've all been tested for interoperability on the show floor at Interop.
Now, one of the things that's different about Interop is that, we build the network.
Correct.
No one else does that. You know, when you talk about these big trade shows, most of them rent the network that's in place. What are the challenges inherent in building out a network in such a short period of time?
Well, I suppose there's a number of challenges. One is, probably in the first instance, how to make it interesting for both the people who are building it and also for the attendees that are coming on to see it and experience it. So we sort of look at, you know, what sort of concepts we can put into play, whether it's, you know, using wireless across a whole event space or using software-defined networking concepts, or whether it's, you know, what sort of applications we can run over the network, and then work out, okay, how can we put this into a live environment in a very short piece of time? And in some cases, yeah, we may not do full implementations of a technology or a concept. We'll only do a part implementation, because we're limited by time and, you know, venue constraints.
One of the things that I love is that most of the team at Interop isn't getting paid to be at Interop. It's actually volunteers. You yourself started as a volunteer, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I started, was it 97, back in Australia doing some of the small shows. And for me, Interop's been a career path. My first job on the Interop net was terminating cable on a show floor in Sydney. Now, at that time, I knew nothing about cabling. And it was, here it is, here's the specs, here's the instructions, go and do it. After 300 cables, you sort of learnt, yeah, some of the better ways to do things. And it all started from there. And a lot of the guys have come from that same sort of position. All the team have been volunteers, whether they're staff or team leads. They've all started as volunteers terminating cable.
Now, this is not the only thing you do. You actually come from a networking background. So you want to tell us a little bit about what you do in the off season?
I suppose my off season is probably 4 or 5 months a year. At that time, I live over in London, and I worked with as a support arm for some of the US companies that are trying to break into the European market. And work as their local feet on the ground, help them develop some of the sales stuff.
Okay. Now, here's a question. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be rude. But if I don't ask you this, people are going to say I was treating you with kid gloves. That is this. When we look at conferences, because there's a lot of conferences that pull our attention during the year, there are those who say the era of the conference is over. And it doesn't make sense to do this thing behind us, to set up these expensive booths on these big show floors, that it doesn't make sense for us to spend all this money traveling around the world, that we can get all the information we need about a product just by going to their website. So to someone who's growing up in that environment, what would you tell them about an experience like Interop?
Well, yeah, I suppose from my perspective, obviously the first thing is, if you don't come to the conference, I'm out of a job. But, to be serious about it, I think in some aspects, in some cases, they're probably right. But there is also a good argument for certainly, you know, multi-vendor shows like Interop, where you get the ability to have face-to-face chats with the engineers, the salespeople, perhaps the marketing people of a particular vendor, but not just a particular vendor, but of all the vendors who are at the show. So, yeah, you can get online and you can look up certain specifications for, a particular product. And you can compare it, online and, do the little comparison sheets and whatever else. You come to these live events and you actually get to experience it, put hands on and see these particular systems, devices, concepts, whatever they are, side by side. Talk to the people who know the most about them, and then do a really decent comparison.
So, in other words, you could get it online, but you can understand it in person.
Yeah, I think there's value in that sort of face to face. The ability to pick up a phone and talk to somebody, and pick up the nuances in their voice and in the conversation is certainly a lot better, I feel, than getting on the web or in chat rooms or whatever else. No offense to the chat room guys. But sometimes the tone of a conversation, you know, the intent of a conversation is lost in translation when you're putting it all in writing.
Great. Glenn, thank you very much for spending your time with us. I know you're busy because we're still setting up the show.
Yeah, and so, I've got a wireless problem to fix.
Get rid of that cherry picker.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we actually have a little video for you to show you a behind-the-scenes look of what it takes to set up all the fiber and copper that goes into Interop.
Hi, my name is Ed Gastel. I'm with JDSU, and I'm in the NOC here at InteropNet New York 2012. JDSU is the official test and measurement sponsor of Interop for 2012, and what I'm here to do is just talk a little bit about the kind of testing that we do for Interop. We really try to focus on doing proactive testing before we put any traffic onto the network versus reactive troubleshooting after there is traffic on the network and people on the network. So we do a lot of activities with various products to make sure that the network is really properly built from the ground up before any traffic is put onto it. So one of our very first things is for fiber. We use the Fiber Essentials Toolkit and we inspect all the fiber end faces, make sure that they're clean. If they're not clean, we clean them before we connect anything up. So we have a lot of SC and LC, just duplex fiber. And we also have MPO, so 12 strands of fiber within a single connector. So we inspect them all first, because if you have any dirt or debris, you're going to have a couple things. You're going to have contamination of the other end face that you mate with, and you're also going to have excessive loss. So we've seen in some cases at least 8 dB of loss due to a dirty end face connector. Really makes the difference between a link working or not working. So again, all the fiber in the network has been inspected. It's been cleaned before we connect up, so we're really sure that we're not going to have a problem due to a dirty fiber end face. Once we've done that, we then, for all the fiber links, we certify them with the Certifier 40G, and that does a loss and length measurement of the fiber so that we make sure that we're in our length budget, usually 550 meters for gigabit Ethernet, and also our loss budget, which is typically with the type of fiber that we have here, about 4.5 dB. So we set it up so that we can just do a pass-fail analysis for the loss and length, and then provided that we're within our tolerances, we then can connect up and be very confident that our Ethernet is going to work very well across that fiber. This Certifier 40G we also use for the copper backbone links, and again we do a certification to the Category 5E cabling standards, make sure it passes all of that so that we know for sure that gigabit Ethernet, electrical gigabit Ethernet, will work over those backbone links. Moving over to here, we have the T-Bird 5800, which we use along with some T-Bird 6000s that we have out in the co-location facilities. And this product is really more of a layer 2, layer 3, layer 4 tester, so your IP, your Ethernet, TCP type of testing, to make sure that we have the kind of throughput that we want to see. We use it to test the wide area network links out to the co-location facilities first, but then we also use it once the network is built to make sure that from all the different racks within the network, all the different access equipment, that we have the type of throughput that we would expect, again, at all those layers. And finally, we have the Landscaper Pro, which we use to deploy the show floor. So the expo, which has got all the drops into the individual booths, we use this just simply to do a wire map test, make sure that everything is pinned out properly, connected back into the racks correctly, and then we can perform a DHCP test to make sure that we have an IP configuration, and we can also ping both into the NOC and to the outside world to make sure that we have IP connectivity to all those drops. So one of the things that we see here is that we have to use different tools. They somewhat have a specific purpose. Each tool has its own purpose, whether it's inspecting a fiber end face or whether it's measuring throughput at layer 4. Every tool has a specific purpose. So we need to bring all these tools together so that we can bring the entire network up together and make sure that it works well and we don't have to do a lot of then reactive troubleshooting and take things down afterwards. So once again, my name is Ed Gastel. I'm with JDSU. If you'd like more information about us, please go to jdsu.com/test.
Now, Chibert, you're still down in the NOC. I mean, you're our representative down on the show floor. So you have had a lot of experience cleaning fiber and making sure fiber is proper to deploy across the network. How important is it to inspect before you connect?
Well, actually, one of the things that I tell my students is I actually go and start doing some fiber demonstrations. And then I purposely leave an uncapped piece of fiber just laying on the table while we're eating lunch. Just in the time that it takes, you know, that we ate lunch, I put it back without cleaning. I put it back under the microscope, and it was covered by a pretty clear and thick layer of dust just from sitting out during lunch. We also had a problem where last year at the interrupt show on our 10 gig links, someone had plugged in a dirty patch cable and spiked a $7,000 10 gig optics. It cost us a day of troubleshooting and a $7,000 optical cartridge. A real bummer, if you ask me.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that if you plug in a dirty piece of fiber, it's not just that the connection may not work. It's that you could be contaminating the SFP or the port that you're plugging it into. And if you can't clean it, I mean, you're going to have to go send it out to get it either replaced or repaired. So we're joined here by a guest who has some special knowledge on the topic, Mr. Mark Sullivan, who's also one of the team leads here at InterOp. Mark, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're the physical guy, and that means something very specific in InterOp before you all go crazy. You're the guy who handles the physical network. You make sure the connections work. You make sure the copper is good, the fiber is good. What strategies have you put in place to make sure that we do actually clean the fiber before we start plugging in all our modules?
Certainly. We work from the standpoint that no piece of fiber is ever cleaned at any time. Every time we patch something into the network, before we do that, we clean it. If we're going to move it, and it's been some time since we've patched it before, we'll go back and we'll clean it again.
And as far as teaching people, because InterOp is all about teaching them. I mean, we teach our ITMs, our new volunteers. We let them get their hands on to the fiber. Isn't there sort of, well, a conflict of interest? We're trying to create a production network, and it's not always a good idea to give a $10,000 SFP to a novice.
Right. You would think that, but most ITMs that are coming to the show are practicing a high degree of care with the equipment. Most of the ITMs have quite a bit of industry experience. They just come here so that they can have a new experience, if you will, or maybe sometimes get themselves out of their comfort zone. So we actually feel comfortable putting in their hands, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment, because they may not get the opportunity to do that in other locations.
And literally, it is millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yes.
One of the coolest things that you get to do if you ever do become an InterOp volunteer is you get to go to the hot stage mm-hmm. in California where we build everything. Because, I mean, there's empty racks, there's a lot of equipment, and it needs to be put together and configured.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, you are a volunteer, right? So you're not getting paid for this. So what's your day job?
So my day job, I work for Ascent Technical Group, and primarily we spend our time working on acquisitions and divestitures from a technical standpoint. We go in, we help a corporation separate away their network or add their network into the new acquisition.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for talking about your role here at InterOp. It is fascinating to see us put together the network that drives the services that keeps all our vendors and our users happy. You know what else keeps vendors and users happy? When they can stay connected. And this is why I want to thank one of our brand new sponsors for TWiET, Ting. Now, you might be asking yourself, what is Ting? Well, Ting is and they call themselves this, a no BS mobile service. Ting is a reseller of nationwide Sprint network service. So how is Ting different? Well, it's a no contract, no early termination fee, truly and completely free, contract-free, no early termination-free service. It's not bundling or ride-along services. You get to choose from extra small to extra large for voice minutes, for text messages, and megabytes of data, all billed separately. There are no overage charges or penalties. If you use more than you thought you would, you just pay for what you use. You also get credits on unused services. If you use less than you thought you would, Ting drops down to the level that you hit and credits the difference on your next bill. No, there are no add-on charges, voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, and all other features are part of an all-you-can-eat service. There are no add-on charges and no surprises. Now, you get unlimited devices on one plan. That means you get to share your pooled resources, minutes, messages, megabytes. Each device on the plan costs a flat $6 extra per month, but the resources that you already bought, the data plan, the voice plan, the messaging plan, you get to share it between all the devices you have on your plan. It's a powerful online service that has an online account control panel. You take control of your account, your usage, and your bills in one powerful, easy-to-use control panel that's available 24 hours a day. Also, it's not just online service. It's a no-holds-barred customer service. You can call them at 1-855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, and a real person will pick up the phone. It's a fantastic way to mobile. It's a fantastic way to connect. It's a fantastic way to Ting. Now, I want you to visit Ting today at enterprise.ting.com. Save money and better manage your mobile minutes with Ting. Check out their savings calculator and see how much you or your company can save. My viewers also save $50 on their first Ting device when you sign up. So visit enterprise.ting.com and start saving today. I thank Ting for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. We continue our behind-the-scenes look at Interop with a glance into the colo.
I'm Jeff Enters, and I'm the Worldwide IPv6 Portfolio Manager for HP's Technology Services Organization. And we're here today at Interop New York 2012 at the Javits Center to talk a little bit about InteropNet and what HP is doing with it. The InteropNet network is different than anything else out there. It's not an enterprise network. It's not a data center by itself. It's not a small enterprise network. It's a little bit of everything. It's, you know, we got data centers in three different locations across the country, in San Francisco, Denver, and Newark, New Jersey. Those different co-locations provide services for the show. So this network is very different in the fact that we have those three different co-locations, data centers, cloud, if you will, and then we have the actual show. And the show networks, both Las Vegas and New York, are set up in very compressed time frames. So we have a matter of a few days to bring up a network from nothing to completely live. When you're looking at a network that is only up for about 7 to 8 days, any downtime is critical. It's extremely important for us as we sit there and are looking at our network. If there's something going wrong with our components, we want to also understand at the same time what's happening with the other vendors. If there's something else that is going on that's maybe impacting ours, our intelligent management center is able to look across all those different vendors and understand what other problems may be occurring on the network. So we don't troubleshoot too far without understanding that there's something else being worked on already. So one of the new things that we're doing this year, we kind of stepped it up a little bit, is we brought in our Tipping Point 6100Ns, latest, greatest IPS box that we have, and we lined it across all three of those colos that I talked about earlier. So the San Francisco, Denver, and Newark colo. So right at the edge of those networks, there's 3 1-gigabit connections going out of each one of those co-locations, and we're protecting all three of those. The difference behind those is this, again, is not your typical enterprise network, and so we can't just lock everything down. This is not about protecting us from the internet. This is about us protecting the internet from us. So really, that's what we're doing with those tipping points. We can't just lock down this network. We have to leave it wide up. When it's very important for the vendors that are out on the show floor to be able to do whatever it is they need to do to demonstrate their latest capabilities, products, technologies, whatever it might be. And so if we start locking things down, it's gonna hamper their abilities. So we have to leave it wide open. But what the tipping points gave us was the ability to watch for anything that may be compromised on the inside of the network. So be able to see that there was a compromised machine. It's infected and it's trying to get out to external networks. And so we can see that, we can find that person, and we can help them clean that off their machine. The RFP, or request for proposal, that InteropNet just put out for next year, for 2013, just came out. And it was great to see in there that they had, SDN, software-defined networking, all about rapid deployment of different applications and services, right? So from months to minutes, deploying of different services. So that's a big one out there right now in the industry that people want to see. So InteropNet has got that in there for the RFP next year. They want to see what we can do in those areas. So that's one that people can respond to. The other one is BYOD, bring your own device. So the number of devices in the world these days that people are carrying around with them and bringing into work, and this opportunity for the different enterprises to capitalize on that and possibly reduce some of their internal costs is another big one out there right now. And that's what InteropNet's doing. They're doing the right things to bring in those latest and greatest technologies for us to demonstrate our capabilities. So it's great.
Now, one of the interesting things that people may not realize about InteropNet is that we actually have three colos. We have one in Denver. We have one in Sunnyvale. We've got the one in Newark. Chiebert, why do we need three colos for one show?
Well, a lot of this is that old adage of eat your own dog food. What we've done is before we used to ship a massive truckload of racks full of equipment with servers and so forth so we could provide the services on the show floor. Now a lot of those services are up in the clouds. So for every show, for Las Vegas, we actually have a dual link, one to Sunnyvale, one to Denver. For the New York show, we have two links also, one to Denver and one to Newark. That way, if any one connection should have a problem, say like some idiot goes and digs without checking and cuts the fiber, we still have a connection to the secondary link, and each of the colos are then cross-connected. It gives us the ability to keep more of our services running all year round, and it also gives us the ability to shift some of that load back and forth. So having a colo means we have more time to do setup, we have more time to tinker with it and tweak it through the year so that when we get it onto the show floor, we have a lot more time to work on advanced technologies.
Eric Duckman in the chat room is saying that it's basically a belt and suspenders approach, and that's true. You never want a single point of failure, even if it is your colos. Now, speaking of belt and suspenders, one of the strengths of InteropNet is that we have a lot of experience. We have a lot of people who work in the real world who are not all just theoretical. And one of those is the man sitting next to me, Mr. Marty Krepfel. Marty, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Padre. Thanks for having me.
Now, Marty, what is your job at InteropNet?
Right, I have a couple different jobs. Generally, I'm in charge of the colo facilities. I'm located in Denver so that I have reasonable access to that facility and generally go, and if there's a problem, they might send me and say, look, go figure out why the circuit isn't up or what this particular piece of equipment needs to be routed. A lot of times I get shipments of equipment right to my house and I deliver them up there and install them into the network and get them configured initially, then available for the rest of the team to get after it when it's installed.
Now, give me some knowledge here. What's one thing that you think a lot of people don't know about a colo? Because as you mentioned, you spend a lot of time in the colo, and most will never, ever see the inside of a colo. And we can't bring cameras inside of a colo. What's it like? What's the environment? I mean, really, what is this mysterious thing that we call a colo?
You know, the colo is actually a very secure facility. It's very difficult to get into, as you mentioned. Most people can't get in there without having your name on a list and so forth and pre-authorization. It's basically a 100,000 square foot raised floor building. It racks and racks of servers, and it basically sounds like a jet engine. Fans upon fans upon fans. It's a very loud place. You would never expect it to be as loud as it is. And after about half an hour, you're exhausted just from the ambient noise. It's an incredible facility from a technology perspective, and the great power, great air conditioning, lots of redundant systems. Wonderful place if you have to have a mission critical piece of equipment running all the time.
Marty, what is it that you do when you're not at InteropNet?
Well, my specialty is working with small businesses, typically professional organizations like doctor's offices or lawyer's offices that use technology but really aren't large enough to have their own technology staff. So I'm essentially a technologist for rent, if you will, to keep them up and running, get their problems solved. Anything from simple things like I can't print to setting up network connectivity, web presence, and so forth.
And if there was someone out there who was thinking about participating with InteropNet, was thinking about coming here, what kind of advice would you give him or her to ease their transition into the InteropNet flock?
You know, I think one of the first things to do is just come to the show, see what it's about, see what it feels like, pick up on the energy. I mean, one of the things that Glenn mentioned was, that there is definitely an advantage of being at the show. And I think one of the things that I've always taken away from the show is just an incredible energy and enthusiasm that people have for their technology and for the general technology that is shown at the show. pick up on that and then sign up to volunteer. Ask a lot of questions. Make a pest of yourself to some level. And immediately somebody will notice you and you'll get invited to come. We're always looking for willing hands.
Well, you've heard it from an expert. Make a pest out of yourself. That's how you succeed at Interop. Marty, thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for talking and sharing some of your knowledge. I do want to take another break to we'll talk about another one of our wonderful, wonderful sponsors. This time, it's MailRoute. Do you need a way to have maximum no spam? Or are you already doing some kind of email filtering, but you're unhappy with the level of service that you get from your provider? If that's the case, then you need to try out MailRoute. Now, MailRoute is a different kind of email service. They're in the cloud. They put all their services in the cloud, so you know you're going to have maximum availability. They also offer live support. That's one of these things that, well, it's taken for granted until you don't have it. They give you a live person to call Monday through Friday, business hours, 6 a.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. If you need assistance after hours, when you call them, a service ticket is automatically generated and you get contacted within the hour. That service, and when you're dealing with something that's mission critical like email, you want that to be in your back pocket. You want that peace of mind. Now, MailRoute is a hosted email filtering service that it's available for businesses of any size. There's no easier way to filter your email. You don't have any hardware or software that you need to add to your network. You simply point your email to MailRoute. They filter it, and they deliver it to your email servers. Nice, clean stream of emails anytime you need it. Now, because MailRoute is in the cloud, it eliminates the need to have a dedicated server for spam filtering. All that's necessary is that you change your DNS MX record, and that starts your flow of clean email. You don't even have to own or manage your own email server. As long as you have your own domain, MailRoute can filter your email and send it off to your server wherever it may be. Now, MailRoute also recently added an administrative interface that gives you direct control over every aspect of your service, from setting the sensitivity of the spam filters to adding domains or users and managing whitelists and blacklists. End users can manage their own settings and administrators can control them all. Now, over the past 12 months, we blocked over 235,000 spam messages for Tom Merritt. That was 99.7% of his total mail volume, and it allowed him to reclaim a domain that had been abandoned to spam. We've also blocked almost 750,000 messages for Leo in the last 12 months. That's over 12 million messages blocked since he started using MailRoute. Now, MailRoute also has disaster recovery service. That means it holds mail for up to 15 days with no file limit if your server goes down. That means if you need to make a change, if you have a disaster, if you're moving offices, you don't have to worry about mail bouncing. It's delivered, it's held, it's filtered, and then it's forwarded to you when your server becomes available. What I want you to do is to try it for free. Visit MailRoute.net, click the sign up button, and enter the promo code ENTERPRISE to start your 15-day free trial and get 10% off for the life of your account. No credit card is required for the free trial. That's MailRoute.net. Click the sign up button and enter the promo code ENTERPRISE. And we thank MailRoute for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, we've had enough of Marty. Thank you for sending on him his way. But we haven't had enough of the behind-the-scenes look at Interop. Here we go with another episode of The Data Closet.
Hello, my name is Ken Bocchino. I'm a senior consultant with F5 Networks. I'm here in the NOC, Network Operations Center, here in New York City, 2012. F5 is here for the second year in the NOC, delivering application availability overall between multiple different services that the Interop network needs to operate, as well as providing data center firewall protection for a lot of the services we also provide. What makes the Interop network unique for F5 being deployed here is that it's not quite an enterprise-based network and it's not quite an ISP. We actually are kind of in a hybrid mode where we have attendees that are coming by the thousands into the show, and they need base services that are highly available, 5.9s. And we also have vendors that are here at the show that are looking for highly available network connectivity, more like an ISP. What's unique about F5 is that we play quite nicely in both scenarios, and we are quite flexible with the ability to deploy us within a hybrid a network like this, showing off both the enterprise-based deployment scenarios as well as the ISP-based scenarios that you would commonly find in your environment. So in our case, we are looking to provide the highly available base services that any attendee would need to have, DNS and other services that are core to their ability to get onto the network. From a BYOD perspective, or bring your own device perspective, getting onto the network goes through our appliances initially to go onto that infrastructure. And as well as from a vendor perspective, getting to base services that are always up, always online, regardless of the state of the show, if it's currently in transit between Las Vegas to New York, or if it's online here at the actual driver center. A common mistake that most people make around firewalls is thinking that an enterprise-based firewall is the same as a hosting-based or data center firewall, where an enterprise-based firewall is commonly deployed to protect thousands of users on an internal corporate network from the outside world, or potentially to other areas of the enterprise. A data center hosting-based firewall is looking to provide protection for a certain set of services you as a content provider are looking to provide to the outside world. In a typical scenario of deploying an enterprise-based firewall in a hosting-based environment, you're potentially going to run into the inability to scale for the millions of users that are coming to your services on your internal hosting environment. You also have the potential for attack, and in most cases, you're not going to be able to allow your enterprise firewall to scale to the needs of an attack on your hosting environment. What we do at F5 is actually simplify and flatten that model, where we take the L4 type protection that you might look to provide via ACLs, as well as the advanced technologies that we have to provide security for content that you're looking to provide to the web. And we do this via our long history of TMOS, which is our traffic management OS, and its ability to scale quite large to the overall connection per second rates that you would typically see from a DDoS or typical use case of a very large web hosting environment. We then add on top of that the ability to inspect and verify traffic as it comes in from an application level perspective using WAF-based technology, using our ASM, our application module security. And we overall provide all that within a single management UI instead of managing that same security model within multiple different appliances. By doing this, we allow the ability to scale quite large, quite quickly within a single appliance model and don't have to reinspect the same packets over and over again where you would typically see in a multiple appliance deployment scenario. If you'd like any more information about our approach to data center firewalls or any other application delivery type technologies, please visit f5.com. I'm Ken Bocchino from F5. Thank you very much.
Joining us now is, the master of our externals, Mr. Brandon Ross. Brandon, thank you very much for coming on.
Of course.
Now, I've already sort of hinted at it, but what is your role at Interop?
Right. So my role here is to lead the team that handles the external connectivity for the show, as well as routing and switching throughout the show floor.
Now, this used to be a different kind of job when we had all of the equipment on location, when we had all the servers and all the switches actually on the show floor. Pretty much all we had to do was connect back to the colo. Now that we've moved into this model of having all of our services in the three colos that we keep, what has changed about delivering services to the show floor?
Well, honestly, things have actually gotten quite a bit easier. You see, using the cloud, as it were, to pre-stage our gear in the three colos you mentioned around the country means that that equipment doesn't have to be shut off, put in a truck, shipped to New York, turned back on again in the minimal amount of time that we have to get things going between when we have access to the convention center and when the show starts. So it's allowed us to have a permanent base of equipment that we know is running, that we can check at any time, and that's already there.
Now, Chibert, you've also had experience with delivering externals, with making sure that our connectivity stays up. And one of the topics that we consistently bring up on TWiET is this idea of, as services are moving into the cloud, it becomes more and more reliable as long as you trust your externals. What does Interop teach us about those externals?
Well, Interop's always had this... Am I on mute again? No. Okay, sorry. Interop's taught us that redundancy is not a bad thing, and being paranoid isn't a bad thing either. We have had cases where we were actually hit by a cable cut by a contractor that somewhere along the line, the documentation was bad and they were digging in the wrong place. But because we had a redundant link, nobody on the show floor actually noticed that we were down. We designed in that kind of redundancy. And in the past, even when the networks weren't as reliable, in the mid-90s, Interop was actually running a 5-layer redundant network. And we could actually switch to a complete backup fiber infrastructure within the show floor in case one of the snorkel lifts dragged down some of our fiber in the roof. So we plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Now, speaking of planning for the worst and hoping for the best, what's the worst thing that's happened to Interop in your time on the show?
Oh, my. Well, there was one incident that was very similar to what Cheever just described, where a lift went under a trestle that was carrying a large bundle of fiber and nearly caused a large problem. Luckily, it was just as the show ended, so I don't think it ended up being that big of a disaster. But we've had all kinds of things happen. You know, there's been issues with connectivity to the outside world. There's been internal connectivity problems. Most importantly, there's been hardware damage because of certain things that we've done and the certain ways that we deploy a network that that you wouldn't normally do in a normal enterprise environment.
Now, also, when we're talking about an enterprise environment, we have a weird thing here going on where we're this hybrid. Two of our videos have mentioned that we're not quite an enterprise network. We're not quite an ISP network. What does that mean exactly? I mean, what's the honest-to-goodness layman's term difference between an enterprise and an ISP network?
Well, you know, in an enterprise network, you can easily control all of the elements. Anything connected to your enterprise environment, you control, right? You control your desktops, you control your servers, you control what services are running on them. In a service provider environment, you don't have that luxury. In a service provider environment, all kinds of different people are connecting to your network with all kinds of different equipment, and you only control the network to a certain point, and after that point, the customer or the client controls it.
Okay. Now, like most of the other people here, you don't work for UBM. You're a volunteer. You volunteer your time to participate in Interop. What is it that you do in the real world?
That's right. Me and my partners own a professional services company called Network Utility Force. We provide professional services to deploy networks like Interop for both enterprises and service providers, especially these kinds of new hybrid networks that we're talking about a lot, that a lot of enterprises are finding themselves in. Unlike the old days where, like I was describing earlier, you control all the pieces of your network, most enterprises are finding that their users are bringing their own devices, are wanting to set up their own servers and their own desktops, and even have their own small networks in parts of their larger enterprise. So we help companies act more like a service provider so that they can anticipate and deal with all these new devices and servers and that kind of things connected to the network today.
Well, Brandon, thank you very much, not just for being on the show, but for your years of service to Interop, for keeping us connected, for keeping the network going.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And, well, you know, we do have one more sponsor. We have one new sponsor who I'm actually quite excited to have because it's a future topic of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is social in the enterprise. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you in part by Social Media Solutions from SAP. Now, these days, much of the conversation about brands comes online. It's with people posting to Facebook or with writing a comment on a blog or tweeting and then having that tweet go around the world. It's common for most of the information that we know about a company, about their vibe, about their buzz, to come through social media channels. And if your work is in social media at a large enterprise, it's challenging because how do you take all those bits of information? How do you take all those different social avenues and turn it into something that you can make business decisions based upon? That's where SAP comes to play. Now, if you want to use their software, they have a listening component that searches the social web in a smart way to know what is being said about your brand. It captures and reports on conversations about relevant terms, about passions, patterns, and even your competitors. It surfaces sentiment and the intensity of it. For example, do your customers like, love, or dislike something? It's not just whether or not people are talking about you. It's what they're talking about. That's something that's important if you're going to be doing work in the social realm. It helps you build better products by incorporating real-time customer feedback into your innovation efforts. It also helps you identify customers who are ready to buy. It's like a social CRM based on buying signals that they're sending via social media. And it uses natural language processing, or NLP, to intelligently and automatically know the difference between similar statements. For example, it knows the difference between "this app has never been good" and "this app has never been this good." It's actually able to understand language. That's something that we want out of our intelligent software. Now, the engaging component is the second aspect of SAP's social media solution service. It helps you improve customer service by allowing you to set rules about which messages to route to whom and how they should be dealt with. For example, if someone tweets a technical support problem, you can get it to the right person automatically and fix their problems through social media, rather than having the tweet bounce back and forth between sales and customer service. SAP social media solutions from SAP gives you an accurate and real-time understanding of your brand's social media performance, and that's unparalleled power in the world of the social. Now, if you manage the social media presence for a large regional or national enterprise, get in touch with SAP now. You can find out more at sap.com/twit. We thank SAP for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. I want to thank all of our guests. I want to thank everyone who was on the panel. I want to thank our audience for sticking through all the technical difficulties. Chibert, I want to throw to you really quick. Is there anything that you would like to promote, anything you want people to know about?
I would like everybody to realize that InterOp is a volunteer program. And if you are interested, I actually threw the URL into the chat room, but it is volunteer.networkops, then spelled NETWORKOPS.net. Feel free to drop an application in, and we'd love to have you on the team.
Yes, indeed we would. We're always looking for volunteers. And unfortunately, we've run out of time. Otherwise, we'd talk more and more about this wonderful show being built behind me. Now, before we go, I do want to say, if you're listening to this on the audio download, two things. First, definitely download the video podcast, because you get to see in the videos all the B-roll, all the clips, all the slides that add a dimension to the information that you're receiving through Twiat. Also, if you are listening or watching this on the download, why not join us live? We try to tape every Monday at noon Pacific time. We also have a live chat room that lets you talk to some of the most brilliant people, some of the coolest geeks, and some of the most interesting trolls on the internet. Because Twit is not just a network for content, it's a temporary community. Also, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you do, you'll be able to find out what we're talking about on each episode of Twiat. You'll be able to vote on the videos that we display, and you'll be able to find out what I do in my Uber Geek travels. Finally, I want to thank everyone at the Brick House, because this has been a challenging episode, especially our technical director, Jason, our wonderful producer, Karsten, and for Brian for holding it all down from the Brick House. One last bit, and that is, if you are in the New York area, please stop by InterOp, knock on the knock window, and talk to Brian or I. We'd love to see you. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Father Robert. And remember, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiat.